KW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. It's 17 days until Election Day, and today former President Trump campaigns in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Michigan and Detroit and Georgia. She will not be alone, and ABC's Mary Alice Park says that's part of the Democratic strategy.
The Harris team likes to say that they think they're competing with the couch. They're worried that young voters might just stay home. And I think that's part of where both candidates will use celebrity endorsements in these final weeks. Harris has this event in downtown Detroit with Lizzo sort of back home in her hometown trying to get out the vote and energize people there.
Hundreds of people had to evacuate their homes in the Oakland Hills in California, as 15 million people in the state are under fire weather alerts. 33,000 Boeing machinists have been on strike for over a month. Their union says it's received a new offer from Boeing that's worth reviewing. Meanwhile, about 200,000 mail carriers reached a tentative labor agreement with the U.S. Postal Service. This is ABC News. New details are out about what may have led to the death of singer Liam Payne, who fell from a hotel balcony in Argentina. An ABC News source says a hotel worker suspected of giving the former One Direction member drugs on the day he died. But ABC's Melissa Adon says that person has not been arrested or charged.
The prosecutor's office confirms that photos shared with ABC News appearing to show drugs and a smashed television were taken inside Payne's hotel room. Now, Payne's preliminary autopsy report says his death was the result of multiple traumas and internal and external bleeding, adding that Payne didn't seem to adopt a reflex posture to protect himself and that he may have fallen while in a state of semi or total unconsciousness.
Philip Zimbardo died at 91. He was a psychologist at Stanford University who led the controversial Stanford Prison Experiment intended to examine the psychological experiences of being in prison. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hi, this is Jim Schmidt, your former mayor of Green Bay. You know, I've always cared about local issues. I still do. Join me on my new show, Lean Local, here on WGBW. I'll interview community leaders and elected officials, discuss the economy and development projects, and we'll talk about the future of education here in Greater Green Bay. As they say, all politics is local. So join me for Lean Local, Sunday at 1 p.m. on the Talk of Green Bay, 97.9 WGBW.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.FM.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes, just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The candidates for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin have starkly different views on reproductive rights. Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde debated Friday night. Hovde says Wisconsin and all 50 states should decide for themselves.
I think we as a state should resolve this issue with a referendum where everybody gets a right to vote. The voters get a right to vote, I get a right to vote.
Baldwin says the better way is to codify Roe v. Wade nationwide.
Your rights and freedoms should not depend on your zip code or the state in which you live.
The race has tightened, and the outcome in Wisconsin could determine the balance of power in the entire U.S. Senate. Senator Baldwin has accused Eric Hovde of saying single parenthood leads to poverty and drug addiction. Here's Tricia Young with a Wisconsin Watch fact check.
Hovde, who was running against Tammy Baldwin, was criticized in a Baldwin ad for allegedly suggesting single motherhood leads to household poverty or drug addiction. Hovde said children, quote, born out of wedlock, unquote, face a, quote, direct path to poverty, unquote, citing studies linking single-parent households to higher drug rates. Studies support this correlation, particularly among low-income households. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Learn more at wisconsinwatch.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, highs near 71 degrees. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 53. Southwest winds about 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday, sunshine, 77. Monday, sunny and 77. Partly sunny and 70 on Tuesday.
Right now, it's 62.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Monday's show, we'll find out what 9-year-old podcaster Beckett Kay's got to say about Sunday's game.
And we'll check in with Mike Pritzel and get an update on hurricane relief efforts in Florida.
Join us.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 9. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. We are powered and presented by Everlight Solar. And here is today's episode. Hey, folks, today I am talking to Chapel Heart. They are a great country band. They are from Poplarville, Mississippi. It's sisters Danica and Devin Hart and their cousin, Tree Swindle. They're so much fun. You probably know them from getting the gold buzzer on America's Got Talent. They've worked with Darius Rucker. They've played the Grand Ole Opry. And they've independently released 3 studio albums and 11 singles. Their hit song took off, You Can Have Him, Jolene, which was a response to Dolly Parton's infamous song, Jolene. So make sure you check all that out. But it was so much fun talking with these gals. We talked about everything from music to making content to fishing. And they're going to be on the road. They've got shows coming up, so you can check them out on their website, chapelheart.com. And also, I just want to let you guys know that I'm going to be on the road. We've got dates coming up in Pennsylvania, York, Glenside, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, all coming up. And before that, we're doing a charity show in Nashville with Liam Morgan, John Chris, Dusty Slay. It's to help all the victims of the hurricane. So that's going to be coming up on the 21st, this coming Monday. And finally, folks, I'm going to be at La Crosse in La Crosse, Wisconsin, November 1st and 2nd. We've got 2 really fun shows there. So if you're in Wisconsin, those are some of my only Wisconsin dates for a while. Make sure you check it out. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, I want to let you know that we are raising money for Doctors Without Borders, continue to raise money for them. Check them out, doctorswithoutborders.org, or you can follow at Doctors Without Borders. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Chapel Heart. You guys have a show coming up over at the Grand Ole Opry, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This weekend, on the 11th.
Oh, it's this weekend? Where is the headspace leading into that? Are you guys, like, you've been on the road now for what, 2 years? Pretty consistently? Well, since 2018 you started, right?
We've been on the road pretty much since then.
Right.
Okay. So you've got your 10,000 hours. Is going into an Opry show just like another day, or is there something still special about the Opry that gets you to another place?
I'll start it off because I kind of feel like it might be a 3-part answer, but I feel like at this point, I feel like the Opry is almost like coming home. It's like you get that sense of calm because literally everyone from Uncle Jim, who is like security as soon as you come in, to everyone else there, like they instantly become family, but there's definitely still that, like, you know, you get those jitters before you get out on that stage and step into the circle. I think it's because, I mean, it's just magic all in the place, but it feels mostly for me, it just feels like coming home, especially after being on the road for a long run.
And I think sometimes it does kind of feel like when you do something, like when you go somewhere a lot and you go somewhere consistently, you kind of start to, it kind of starts to feel like, okay, well, we're back there again. But that's what I love about the Opry. There's such a reverence for that place and there's such a reverence for the people there that it doesn't matter. I think we could probably go 1,000 times, and every time you get that feeling when you go, you you feel the feels when you go. You feel the beauty of the weight of the people who've come before you, the artists who've come before you, and you feel it every time you go. So almost there, you almost can't kind of take it for granted. So I love that about going and being a part of the Opry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And was it the Opry that your grandma got to see you? She saw you play there, and it was a couple months before she passed, wasn't it?
Yes. Our grandma, she had 17 children, and there are 108 wow. grandchildren. And so grandma spent her entire life taking care of her family and, you know, raising some of the grandchildren, just pretty much being a pillar in the community. And one thing that was always on her bucket list, she was like, I want to go to the Grand Ole Opry. And she would always talk about that. And then we got the invite to make our debut. So we had to make sure that she was there. And I'm pretty sure that was our grandma's debut and not ours, because nobody really cared about us. They just all wanted to meet her. Everybody got pictures with her. We would just see random pictures of people with our grandma. We're like, Granny, what is this? But that
we had a meet and greet after our debut, but she had a meet and greet.
Yeah. And it was so funny because, like, she took some pictures with us, and then she was still kind of like standing there, and other people came. And then so the guy taking the picture, he was like kind of like gonna move her out of the way, and the people are like, no, we want her in our picture. We want her in our picture too. So she just like stood there with us.
Yeah, like, one moment we're like, Granny, do you want to take a break from the meet and greet? We're like, oh, no, I'm fine. I was like, what?
You guys made her feel like a rock star. That's cool. Did she at least have her shoes on in that picture, or was that
her shoes? But I felt like she kept hers on so some of us could take ours off, because yeah. Oh man.
But to be fair, we did ask. I have to say, and it was kind of hilarious because Deb asked explicitly. She was like, "Okay, because you know, after so many songs, the shoes are coming off." She's like, "Y'all ain't gonna get a picture of my feet, right?" He was like, "No." Very first picture in the article.
Yeah,
I mean, zoomed in and everything.
It was so poetically beautiful.
The way it played out
was so poetically beautiful.
At least
he was like, she was like, "Do I need to put my shoes back on?" He was like, "Oh, absolutely not. It'll be from like the waist up." And the article came out. It was a zoom in picture of her feet, or like Chapel Heart debut at the Grand Ole. Like, we were like, "What?"
It was not even a waist in the picture. It was just feet and ankles.
Really? Well,
yeah,
now
they really tricked me on that one. So anytime someone says that it's going to be from the waist up, don't believe it.
She puts on two pair of shoes.
Now you're on WikiFeet and there's nothing you can do about it. So I feel your pain there. You got to be careful where you wear sandals these days. But
there you go.
That's crazy. I'm actually one of 12 kids. So when I saw, I think I saw an interview somewhere with you and like just half your family, like 100, or it was 50, I think, at one point. You have 100. How many? 108 total?
There's 108. Okay. Oh, you probably saw one of the pictures of our youth choir, and that was about 50 or so kids. You know, just a couple of them.
Okay. And it was the first half. And then there's like a second half that comes after that.
That is a lot of kids. Good Lord. So were you guys like, were you, I mean, your cousins and siblings, but were you friends growing up? Cause I don't think 108. I actually don't know exactly how many cousins I have, but I got a lot, but some of them you're better friends with than others. Did you guys grow up together? Were you always kind of like in that crew? You know, were you in the cousin, like, were you guys in your own clique of cousins?
Having so many cousins and kind of like we were born like in batches or like in litters, I guess.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And so like, so kind of depending on which batch that you were born in, usually there's like an age batch. So like Tree and I are kind of in the same age batch. Deb has a few cousins. Like, I mean, like she has cousins who are like her age. And so kind of growing up, you just kind of played with who was your age. And
right. Different factions of kids.
Yes. And so, but everybody was really close though. Like, you know, we would go to school and, you know, we look out for each other at school. At literally at one point, I just, I just gave up on playing with the kids in my class. And I would walk over to where Tree and them would go to like break or recess or whatever. And the teachers were like, what are you doing? And they'd be like, you know what? Just who cares? Yeah.
That's awesome. So, and then you kind of brought Deb being your sister over to the, that cousin clique. Kind of. Is that
how that works? I'm not going to say that because they were very mean to me and I was never allowed to be in their little group.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. My sister, she was just going to bully her way into
being that's how it worked. I couldn't play with my older sisters in those groups of cousins. So, you know, you should have felt bad. You should have felt bad for me. I just had to play by my lonesome.
Wow.
I think that's traumatic because there was definitely kids you played with.
Close was never the word.
That's good. So I can see where the cracks are going to happen in the group over the years. I can already see, you know, who's going to leave for their solo career. I see it happening just in this conversation.
Yeah.
And it's going to be over who took the mascara, okay? Like something really serious.
So you guys grew up. And you grew up the way I've heard you describe it, a community within a community within a community. And that's how you got the name for your group. Can you kind of give us the full story there?
Yes. So we're from Poplarville, Mississippi. And inside of Poplarville, there's Derby. And then inside of Derby, you have Harts Chapel. And Harts Chapel is pretty much where we grew up, where all of the family lives. Our church is there, our home church, Harts Chapel Baptist Church is there. And so when we were trying to come up with the name, we were just throwing out different ideas, all these things. Nothing was really sticking. And our manager was like, What about Chapel Heart? And we laughed hysterically.
So hard.
That's ridiculous. But then, you know, we kind of said, hold on, wait a minute. You might be onto something because, you know, growing up in Harts Chapel really kind of molded us into the women that we are today. So we were like, Chapel Heart kind of has a little ring to it. But then our other manager, he had already started calling us Chapel Heart and introducing us as Chapel Heart. So we didn't really get to decide for sure, but he made that decision.
It took flight. We got into we were making our first record and we walked into the studio. He was on the phone and he said, I've got my group Chapel Heart here. He was like, they've got a schedule. I was like, we didn't even say yes yet.
You know, naming, I played in like some bands in high school or whatever. It's hard because
it's hard. Oh my.
Well, it's we were picking a tattoo. You know, you're like, what do I want to live with? What do I want to commit to?
Like when we were a cover band, like we came up with a name and
we want to talk about it
because like, we were staying on the street and we started singing indoors and we were like, oh crap, we need a name. And that's when we realized how hard it is to name a band. And we did horrible. I mean, we thought it was the coolest thing, but it was the worst.
What was it? The first one?
Hyperfly
with a PH and two Y's. So when no one could find us online.
And then we had a big fan base from Philly because they would come to New Orleans and be drunk. It's like, hi, from Philly. We're like, yeah, okay.
We knew we didn't get tips throughout the whole year when Philly came to play the Saints. We knew we would be okay.
That's hilarious. And that was why you got that fan base, was because they like misread it kind of.
Yep.
That is, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere. And,
look, I say there's times where you just have to take what you can get.
Have you been back to Philly and just gone under the alt name just to make sure it sells out?
No, you should.
Definitely should. So you moved to New Orleans 2018. Do all of you move at once and just start going, or how does this work?
It was a trickle effect.
I moved down first around 2013, and then it took a while, and then finally convinced Danica to move down because people would be like, you should sing, you should sing, you should sing. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't. Because when you come from a family and there's like literally a choir of 50 other kids who all sing, it's like, it's not,
anything amazing. So I was just like, everybody sings. That's just what people do. But I was like, well, maybe if I can convince Danica to move down. So she moved down in 2014 and we started out.
Because she lost her job.
Putting all her business out there. But
this story will come around, I'll tell you.
And so she moved down and I had this old raggedy keyboard, you know, the big kind that takes D batteries. We called her Big Bertha. And, you know, like we had a list of about 10 songs and we went out and we literally started out on Royal Street. Like we'd sing Islands in the Stream and a whole bunch of other songs and like make mashups. And like we got started like just singing on the streets of New Orleans. And then from there, we moved indoors. We were fancy, you know, playing under a roof. I remember we like played a show for like Catfish and Potato Salad. And honestly, it was pretty dang delicious too.
Yeah, ultimately. Catfish, Potato Salad, and Tips. Those were the days. And, but overall, and then in 2018, when Dev lost her job, I was like, well, why don't you come and sing? I tell people sometimes, I said, we're a family of job losers, but it worked out for us. So, yeah. But we were able, I mean, but we, Dev, we got Dev to come over. We said, why don't you
sing
a little bit?
They actually kidnapped me, if we're being honest.
It was a good kid plan. She's still here.
Trunk, or did they give you a back seat?
Trunk. Was hands tied, blindfolded. She's trying it out, but I say she's on year 6 of her 3-week trial, so I'm still trying to sing.
So you guys, a few things I want to pull out from that. First thing, the D battery keyboard. Are you? How many D batteries did that thing take?
About 6. Most of the money that we made busking, we put to bed.
Goes back to Duracell.
So
how long did
us, we would, what was it? We go to the, it was, we go to the Dollar General had a really good, but a durable D battery. Cause one, I was like spending money on Duracell, they would only last so long, but I don't know what it was. There was a magic in the Dollar General brand D batteries.
Are you serious?
So when Christmas comes around, if you got nieces and nephews and you got all the little things,
I don't even think they make stuff that need D batteries anymore.
Well, they all got plugs.
Or they make it to where you can put 10 A batteries, double A's in there.
That's incredible. How long did a piano last off of? Let's just do a comparison real quick. The Duracell versus the Dollar General, how much longer did it last? Let's do a commercial for the Dollar General.
It would probably give us like 2 days, which would be just like maybe like 2 or 3 days. But the Dollar General easily could do like between four to six.
Wow.
And it was just like, and also it kind of depended on like how long we would be out for the day. And, you know, sometimes we would go and bus like earlier in the day and also come back at night. So some of that stuff mattered, but it was just like, I was like, there is no way these Duracells are not
holding up.
And I
feel like the Dollar General batteries had a little magic because sometimes you think they'd be dead and you turn it on and you get another hour out of them.
I don't know about y'all, but in the country, I would go and I'd like reposition the position of the batteries.
Oh, yeah, you got to switch your ass a bit.
Yeah. And then you were in the back, you go up front. Put the batteries in different and I could get a little life out of them there too.
You rotate them, you get the other side, you know? Yeah. It's a little bit more fire there.
I'm not sure if that's how batteries work, but I think it is.
I think it is. I don't know. Let's roll with it. But then all your family. So when you're saying everybody was in the choir. Do you guys even consider yourself like the best singers of the family? Or are there better singers that are still out there in your family?
I would say, I'm going to speak for me.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they think they're the best singers in the family. But I do think there are better singers in the family than me.
I feel like there are definitely better singers in the family. And I feel like, and honestly, like now we got an Uncle Tommy. He will sing you under the table, under the basement. And they don't even have basements in most of the houses here. But I also feel like, I feel like we are the first three that even pursued singing as an actual career. Cause like growing up in our family, singing is kind of what we did. We grew up in a musical. If there's a birthday party, a divorce party, a wedding, graduation, like we just all wound up singing. Yeah. But in a small town in Mississippi, singing is not a job and it's not a career. So it's not something that a lot of people, like, you know, took serious and mm-hmm. continued with in life. Because so, I feel like there are definitely like some people in our family, had they continued, they'd probably, you know, be some of the greatest singers you've ever heard. But like small town Poplarville, they're like, okay, now get a real job.
Yeah. That is a small town.
We don't listen, amen.
Well, did your family early on, were they supportive of you guys going out to New Orleans after losing your jobs and trying to make it?
Honey, so Tree, when Tree was there, she was she, like she said, she got off of a plane and was like, I don't hear, nobody came to pick her up or something. And she was just like, let's go see what this city's got going for. And so that's kind of how she got to New Orleans. But I started telling my mom and my dad and the people around me, my friends, and I was probably a little more gullible too. So I was like, I think I'm going to move to New Orleans and start singing. They were like, no,
you're going to die.
New Orleans is the highest rate of crime and you're not going to make it. I was like, not at all.
Poplarville is only like between 45 minutes to an hour, depending on who's driving from New Orleans, but it is a completely
different world.
It's a different world.
Like, I like to say it's like 40 miles and 40 years apart. Like, literally.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's just,
It took some years convincing.
Yeah, because I was
come to New Orleans, Danica. Because she's like, no. And then my sister would send a message, come down, come sing.
I was like, no, my family says I'm going to die. So I'll just stay here. So, but it was kind of hard getting to New Orleans, but I always say the universe has a way of just kind of like kicking you out. I love birds. I love birds because once you're going.
I'm like birds.
You never like birds, but I love how birds nurse their children, because once they learn how to eat, once they learn it, they just kick them out the nest and say, like, okay, you got, let's go. Wings activate. And so probably.
Yeah.
And so, but I think when kind of life kicks you out the nest is the best way to just go for it and try it. And
because I mean, that's why they call comfort zones. You get there and you feel good. It's whenever you get shaken up and get forced to go somewhere else, you really start taking real risks.
Well, and that is tough, because I think a lot of people sort of mistake like a comfort zone for a gut feeling, you know, and they think like, oh, my gut feeling says I shouldn't right now. But in reality, like, you're just in your comfort zone. So trying to how were you able to differentiate that? Like, you guys, did you feel that this was my chance? I had to do it. Was there just that kind of fire, that drive inside you to say I'm out?
See, for me, I was at the time I was working at the hospital in Poplarville. And really, if you live in Poplarville, then, you know, like back in the day, like the hospital was the pinnacle. Like if you got to work at the hospital in Poplarville and you lived in Poplarville, you were
that girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so for me, I was like, I mean, I've had the highest job in Poplarville. Like for me, I thought it was it. I'm like, there's nothing else. And so, I don't know, like either I read back over an old email or Trigger, her sister, like resent, like just say, hey, if you're not doing anything, you should come down and visit. And I was like, you know what? If I'm ever going to have a chance at being a real singer, at least like I could go try like right now, I'm not doing anything. And so I waited. And then I had like $26.13 in my account. And I said, you know what? I'm going to just go down and see what I can make out of something. And that we went down and we practiced some songs and we went out and busked. And I came back with a little cash in my pocket and it was enough to put like fill up my tank and have a little bit left over for dinner. So I was like, yeah, I'll be back tomorrow.
Let's try it again.
Now she's the richest person I know.
She really doesn't know a lot of people. But,
so basically that little hit right there was like enough to say, okay, it's good. I kicked my life, kicked me out of the nest sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, what's your favorite bird? Side question. All of you.
Favorite bird. Now, the crazy thing is I don't really like the sound of birds. Like, in the, you know how some people in the morning, they hear the birds chirping. I'm like, hush, I'm asleep.
But plot messed up the picture at night.
Oh, really? Yes. But the one, I think the red bird, I think
a cardinal.
We call it red bird, blue bird. But I think a cardinal is, I think I always hear stories of people being like, and I looked out and I saw a cardinal and it was the sun. So I don't know. I feel like the cardinal's like the ultimate like sun bird.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. It's 17 days until Election Day, and today former President Trump campaigns in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Michigan and Detroit and Georgia. She will not be alone, and ABC's Mary Alice Park says that's part of the Democratic strategy.
The Harris team likes to say that they think they're competing with the couch. They're worried that young voters might just stay home. And I think that's part of where both candidates will use celebrity endorsements in these final weeks. Harris has this event in downtown Detroit with Lizzo sort of back home in her hometown trying to get out the vote and energize people there.
Hundreds of people had to evacuate their homes in the Oakland Hills in California as 15 million people in the state are under fire weather alerts. 33,000 Boeing machinists have been on strike for over a month. Their union says it's received a new offer from Boeing that's worth reviewing. Meanwhile, about 200,000 mail carriers reached a tentative labor agreement with the U.S. Postal Service. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A showdown for the Packers and Texans. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers host the Houston Texans tomorrow at noon. I asked Green Bay running back Josh Jacobs at 5-1. Just how good is this Texans team?
We viewing this as a playoff matchup. I mean, you know, that team over there, even though they're in the AFC, they have a really good team. I think that probably at the end of the year, they're probably going to finish, you know, top four in the AFC. So we viewing it as a playoff matchup, you know, to see where we at right now and see where they at.
Former NFL linebacker D'Amico Ryans has turned around the Texans franchise in his first year as their head coach and talked about Packers quarterback Jordan Love.
Yeah, watching the tape on Jordan Love, I think, you know, he's really very, very good quarterback. Talk about putting the ball where he wants it, like his pinpoint accuracy, like really good. It's going to be a big challenge. Everybody just has to maintain their focus, eye discipline, rush discipline.
That's Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, highs near 71 degrees. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 53. Southwest winds about 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday, sunshine, 77. Monday, sunny and 77. Partly sunny and 70 on Tuesday.
It's 64 at our studios.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in a quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now at WGBW.FM. Your news just for the Green Bay area. I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
The Todd Alba Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Mino and the Mayor.
We have with us Beckett Kay, who is a 9-year-old podcaster. Who's your favorite player then? I mean, you like
on the Ravens?
In general.
Let me guess.
I know what you're going to say, and I'm not going to like it.
It's Patrick Mahomes.
No.
Go ahead.
I don't like your sarcasm.
We're talking in prank, too. All right. I happen to like
it's
you guys.
Justin Jefferson.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Charlie Behrens, host of the Cripescast, and today I am chatting with country band Chapel Heart. Here's my conversation with the group. We got a whole music thing to road to go down here. I'm trying to keep track of time.
We talking about birds.
But while we're on the topic of animals, you guys like hunting? You guys like the outdoors, I'm told. What kind of hunting do you guys do?
I like to fish.
You're a fisher.
Fishing is, if we had an option, probably fishing is going to be top on the list.
I love being on the water, but I love hunting. And honestly, it don't matter. I'll shoot rabbit, I'll shoot coon. We went on a fishing trip and wound up shooting snakes. So,
funny how that happened.
North interesting to the same thing. I don't know. I think I definitely prefer hunting also. They both have their own things, because like hunting, when you don't want to be bothered, you want a reason for everybody to just shut up and be quiet. Like,
well, you need to be quiet fishing too,
and
technically.
This is why. But you can still catch fish and talk.
Yeah, I said you can talk.
But hunting, more. People are like,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I gotta pee.
I talk so much. And she don't even, I know she doesn't like mean to. It literally just comes out. She just can't. Yep.
I'm like donkey off a straight hunting. It's like, so shut up.
No, can I hunt?
All right.
I can see why you guys are musicians and not hosting a show on the Outdoors Channel. Yeah. I can see that. Largely Danica. So what fish are you guys? You guys like bass, catfish in the South?
Catfish. Yeah.
I like to eat catfish, but I mean, catfish is farm raised, and like, I'm a South Mississippi girl in my heart. If you can get me out in the Gulf of Mexico, like, there's nothing like fresh redfish.
I love deep sea fishing. Like, it's just, I don't know. It makes you feel, I think there's a power that comes with it.
Like, I'm all right with my catfish. Like, I like to wrestle with them for a while. And then I feel like that's
there. I think I like the sport of deep sea fishing, and then I like the taste of catfish.
And like, I still can't quite wrap my head around
that tree going.
Catch and release, I feel like that is so cruel. I feel like that's animal cruelty. If you don't catch it, you might as well eat it. But
now,
why are you going to put it through this traumatizing thing and then throw it back?
I feel like it's another chance at life. I hate cleaning fish. So if it's something that I've got to clean, catch and release, I love to do. Now look how big it is. All right, get on back and live your life.
But if it's small, you just cut it up and use it for bigger fish.
That is true. You can chum it.
He's not going to want to do that either.
But cleaning is a big, big pain in the ass. Well, if you guys do come to, you come to Wisconsin ever, we should go out fishing. We can, I can show you the fish up here. We got some walleyes. Those are nice. Okay. We also do have some catfish that you can get too. So we have options. We have options.
Okay. All right.
I fish. Yeah, I fish. I've caught a lot of catfish before, not to brag, you know. Yeah.
Catfish master.
yeah. We have some of those. We have walleye, which are really good eaters, and perch and all that. And then, so we'll go figure out the species and all that. Yes, what about ice fishing? Would you guys go ice fishing?
I hate the cold, but I would definitely go ice fishing.
It would be an experience.
Like, I think at least I'd try it. Honestly, I don't think it'll be that bad, because like, you know,
you drink something.
But no, down here in the South, because it's so humid, it's like 90% humidity minimum. So 60 degrees here feels like 40 degrees other places. Because when I went up to Colorado, it was like -2. And I was like, this is not that bad. And it's kind of freaky.
Like how it's like dry, a dry
cold is not that bad.
Okay,
down here
I should be willing to try it.
Right. And I'm not gonna lie, it can get pretty good. We have some humidity too, so it can get kind of cold here, but you're in the ice shanty, you can be like in shorts and a t-shirt, honestly. So it's not that you can even have a fire on the ice if you want to. Some people freak out.
Yeah, sounds irresponsible.
You know, it is. It does sound that way, but heat rises. So, you know, it's only, it also goes down, but it's minorly irresponsible. We'll just say that.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll stick to just ice fishing for
we're
going to
trust you on this one. Okay.
That may be a smart idea. It may not, but anyways. When it comes to music, you guys went from busking in New Orleans and then, at a certain point, you realize that this isn't just something that you can do for like a little bit of money. This is something that you might be able to do for a career. When did that moment happen? If it was a moment?
I think for me, it kind of happened during some of those crazy busking nights. Cause like, you know, you're walking up and down Royal Street. There are like lots of people singing and performing, but after a while, like people would gather around and like literally fill up the whole street to where the cops would have to come and like shoo people out of the way. And I would always say, I feel like singing on the street is the most honest crowd you'll ever have because 100% of those people are headed somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the fact that people would come and then like people would come from out of state and like plan their trip around coming to see us. It's like, we're back in New Orleans. When are you guys going to be playing on the street? And then one day we were like, this guy was complaining. And then Tony Seville, he owned a bar and he kind of like floated up. And this is in the summer in New Orleans. And Tony had on a 3-piece suit riding on a bike. And he said, you girls don't need this. Come sing in my bar. And then we like started singing it.
The rest is history.
That sounds like a cartoon, the way you just described
it. It was very much so. It felt like a surreal moment. It was like, did this just happen? Like, you know?
But that's almost like y'all walking up to like a white man that says free candy. Like,
all this time.
It really could.
It was summertime making popsicles and I'm gone.
So you start playing inside and by the way, I like what you said about being the most honest audience busking. I mean, that's so true. If you can build a crowd, and I feel like New Orleans is one of the places where that is the thing. And so to cut your teeth there really probably trains you well for the stage and always almost asking the audience, but almost demanding their attention. And I feel like you can sense that in your music and how well it is. Did you feel like the America's Got Talent audition? Did you feel like that sort of set you in a different level? Or before that, weren't you already talking with Darius Rucker and those kinds of folks? So where did the like America's Got Talent of it all, where I think a lot of people were first introduced to you, where does that fit into like your level of next step in the career, if that makes sense?
Well, that's actually kind of crazy because we were just, you know, we started kind of touring around like the Southeast area, just going where we could get booked or whatever. But we actually were in conversation with Darius before we went on AGT. And he was like, I see what you girls are doing and I really like what you girls got going on. And so that's how that kind of whole thing came about. But after AGT, it definitely kind of just skyrocketed after that. And like I said, we were performing and going and doing shows before AGT, kind of just on our own. But yeah, after AGT, things took it up to like 10 more levels for sure.
And the song you chose was not a cover and it was a last minute decision for it to be an original song. So tell me about that moment. Take us into that conversation, because I think kind of a life changing conversation for all of you then.
I think this is one of my favorite stories to tell, because, you know, I think people watch us walk out on stage and we sing, we talk to the judges, we sing and we get the golden buzzer and like they see it and they're like, what a moment. But they don't see the days before that. We there was a girl that reached out. Her name was Lindsay Rush. And she was like, you all should audition for America's Got Talent. She's like, I don't know what I was thinking. She said, I wake up, I listen to you in the morning. She was like, you should audition. She was like, the world needs to hear Chapel Hart. And we were like, thank you, but no thank you. We're playing shows. I said, we're a little too busy to stop and go, but like, thank you. And I said, honey, if we said no 14 times, she said, you need to go 15. And so finally, and we were getting ready to go out on a run with the Indigo Girls, and someone got sick, so they canceled the run. So we were like, well, I know we said no before, but we should go. Like, maybe we should go. And so we went, and we were just thinking, like, how you see on TV, you walk up to the table, you sing for the judges, they tell you yes or no, and you get on back home. So we were like, you know, let's just do it and say that we did. Honey, we were there for 3 days, and it's not like American Idol where everybody's there to sing. So it's like we were sitting in, we called it the holding cell, which is just where everybody would sit. There was people, opera singers, birds flying, dancers.
Goats walking around.
Yodeling.
A man on fire. Like
goats, llamas. You know, it was like sitting in the middle of a circus. We were like, oh God, what do we got something to do? So after like 3 days of that, 3 days of wearing the same outfit, because they're trying to get you like videos of you like standing and moving and sitting. And we were like some of the last, we were like part of like one of the last auditions to go. So when I tell you, we were tired, production was tired. They literally like pushed us on stage and was like, there's no more golden buzzers. Just go out, do your best. All right. And it was like, ooh. And we were like, hey, and you can kind of see it when we're walking out on stage. But so we were just kind of coming a little bit, maybe I feel like not being frustrated, but like just worn out. We were like, you know, there was something I said when the song started, we were a little bit like, we were nervous, but like just a few words in, we were just like, you know what? It's a Chapel Hart show. Come on, let's go. Yeah. And I think that's really what shined through, but it was AGT was, honey, it was a trying time. At one point, we were like walking so much back and forth. I just took my boots off and I put them in the bushes. I said, whenever it's time for us to get to our final destination, let me know. It was crazy.
So, but that decision to not do a cover, so weren't you planning on doing a cover?
Like, that was the one.
During those 3 days, like 3 days of, you know, practicing, getting ready for the actual audition, we were practicing 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton, because, you know, it was a song that we were familiar with. We'd already performed it. And, you know, we had like all the moves and everything down.
Yep. And Jolene was our backup song. Like one, like maybe the third backup song. They asked you to bring three. So it was 9 to 5. I can't remember what the other cover was. And then we were like, if all those fails, we'll do, you can have him, Jolene. And so we were in the room probably 30 minutes before we go out. And the music, so we were doing 9 to 5, and they were like, come on, give it everything you got. And it still just kind of felt like maybe like it was missing something. She said, let me hear that You Can Have Him, Jolene song. Let me hear your original one more time. She said, but I want you to perform it full out like you're out on stage. And so we did it all the way through. And like there was a quiet in the room. And we all knew like this is the one that you got to do. And we just, she said, listen, at the very minimum, you can say you took a chance on yourself.
Oh, wow.
She said, but this song is, she said, the song is so great. She said, I think it can. You know, I think it could stand on its own out there. And we were like, okay. And so
at that point, we were so tired. We were like, okay, well, fine, let's do it.
So I think that's a great idea for the song too, to take a song that was what when was that written, the 70s or something, a song
1974,
so 40 almost 40 years old at that point, and then taking almost the sequel to it, or a different look at it, I guess, because however you said it, after 30, 40 years or whatever, you can have them, Jolene. And it's just a great like twist on that song. Whose idea was that? And where did the sort of inspiration for it come from?
So I always said during COVID, we were bored. And so we decided we were going to put up some YouTube videos, and we would do some of our favorites. So we were doing a cover video to 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. And in the video, Dev is a line cook. So the storyline of the video is that we're all working in this restaurant, but we really want to be big stars and we want to sing on the stage. But, you know, between budget dollars, I think we did the best that we could in this video. But in the video,
the budget was zero.
Yeah, the budget was $0. And so in this video, Dev walks in and she's a line cook, but her shirt says, "You can have him," signed Jolene. And I was like, who does have to think she, how are you going to take my man and then say, "You can have him"? How about you can just have him, Jolene? And we all were like, Like, that's a and so I said, the beauty of that is as a musician, you know, we'll see 100 things a day that inspire us to like, ooh, that's a song. That's a song. It's some of the things that we hear. And, but you know, probably 80% of them don't get written because you just kind of keep going and your mind brain keeps going. But this was the one, that we said, when we sat down, we said we needed to do some writing. But when we sat down, we were like, y'all remember that? You remember when we said, you can have him, Jolene? And we sat down and we started writing. We threw down a couple of concepts. And I think probably in under 30 minutes, like the song just really wrote itself. We just were laughing and singing and talking, and it just all came together. And, you know, when people say the fast ones, if you use the, you know, people say, man, we sat down and we wrote it in 30 minutes. That's usually the ones that are the ones that are locked up in there that just need to get out.
I was just going to say that aspect, because I do stand up and I feel like the best jokes just like flow out. And it's just you hear that in songwriting all the time, that they wrote that song in 2 minutes on the back of a bar napkin or whatever. And you're right, because it sort of like what incubates or it cooks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it's already there because you lived it. But how important is it, like from a songwriting perspective, for you guys to be observing all the time and making time to then almost like, how important is it to be observing and how important is it to be writing? Like, you can't be in writing mode all the time, but you can't just be in like, observe it, jot it down in your notes section or whatever and never come back to it. Like, how much time are you putting toward that creative?
I think we should definitely, I feel like we always could be putting more time towards the actual writing of it. But like, when I say our schedule is something to behold, it's absolutely insane. But I feel like it's important to have that balance, because like you said, it's almost like someone who's perpetually in school but doesn't have any real world application. Like, you have to live the experience or witness these experiences to be able to put it on paper, but you have to remember to put it on paper, because then it never becomes a thing. It's just an idea.
Yeah, right. I think the beauty of it is that creativity just kind of comes when it comes. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's 12 o'clock and you're about to get ready to go to bed and you go, oh man, look, I had a melody in my head. I got to go and da 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 da. And then you start writing and then you start singing and then like, it just kind of starts to pour out. So really, really as an artist, you're a vessel and you're at the mercy of creativity. Mm-hmm. And Tree always says a song knows what it wants to be.
Oh yeah.
And so you know, sometimes you just have to just lend yourself to the song. And and others, here we go. But I think that is a thing for us. But also, I think we're in a different, maybe a unique situation, because we, as independent artists, we are, you know, a lot of times like booking the gigs, what do you call it? Like, you know, for like,
we're front of the house and back of the house,
Back of the house, stage managers and
the janitorial staff and all.
Yes. Also cleaning the toilets. And so somewhere in all of that, I think that we don't really have the opportunity. I think a lot of the times we don't have the same opportunity to just be like, okay, we're going to go schedule 16 writes this week. Okay. And then we're going to go do this. And then we're going to write here and we're going to write there. So a lot of times we're just like, shoom, shoom, shoom. Oh my God, I got a great idea for a concept for a song. Shoom, and shoom. So, yeah. So it's what it typically looks like.
Yeah. You're just holding on for dear life. And if a song is forcing its way out, you have no other choice than to sit there and write it.
There you go.
What's it like being an independent artist in this day and age? Is it something that like you're doing all, I mean, you have a manager still, right? Uh-huh. And you have agent and that kind of thing, but just not signed to a label.
Right. So we've got a few people that like are, we've got a little team, like we've got managers, we've got a booking agent. And we recently just got into distribution this year. We're for our Christmas record that we're about to put out. Our team's kind of growing a little bit, but also too, like, you know, when you don't have the push and support of a label and you don't have the big, you know, the big gorilla who, you know, is radio and all of that, and the labels who have access to that, when you don't have that, I think it does make it a little bit harder.
And I feel like now, and like maybe because like we've we've built this little house we have so far, literally brick by brick, but not just brick by brick. We like had to get the straw and the mud and the water to make the bricks to even build it brick by brick. I feel like now, like saying I'm an independent artist is becoming trendy or something. Like even people who have the backing, who have, you know, the,
or I feel like sometimes like, there's people like on label who are like, I'm an independent artist. When can you define independent?
Because so what do you call independent?
Because we're making bricks over here.
Also, I'm really impressed that Tree knew the ingredients to make bricks.
It's true.
But I'm impressed by that too.
Yeah. I mean, if y'all ever want to make some bricks,
I don't think I look, we do enough brick making in this business, so I think I'm gonna keep making those.
So but, you don't have interest in being with a label, because the other question is, this day and age with social media sort of democratizing your ability to get out there, is a label helpful, or are they taking just too much of a cut, having too much of a say, interrupting the creative process? How do you feel about a label generally?
And it might be like a multi-part answer, but like I feel like there always will be an advantage to have that label, because like you say, whenever you're personally financing every trip, every show, every stay, every like that's a monster all in itself. But you know, you have the label will always have access that, you know, individuals don't have. They will always have connections that individuals just will not have. And but I also feel like there's kind of like a duality to it, because I feel like as an independent artist, once you reach a certain level, and like, you know, I say like for us, for instance, if the right deal came along, I feel like at this point, whoever it is, know that we are so Chapel Heart, we're going to be Chapel Heart regardless of what the situation is. And that's why I feel like if you're just true to who you are in your independence, when it comes along, there will be no reason to try to shape and mold you into something else.
Yeah. And also too, it's like right now we are struggling to get our, like keep our bus on the road. I feel like we get one thing fixed and something else breaks. Whereas opposed to like, if you're on the label, they can just trade it out with another one of the buses that they have. And then they'll send that one to the, to get, you know, to get fixed, or to send it to the graveyard, the bus graveyard. And so there, I think that there definitely is an advantage too. It's like, you know, like say for instance, like, you know, kids who come from famous parents, and it's like, I can lean on my parents, but they usually are the ones who are like, well, why don't you just ask your dad for help? I don't want to ask my dad for help, because I want to do it myself. So like, you know, there is the advantage. You can always kind of lean on like who your mom or dad is as a famous person, but also you really want to, you want to try to trudge and find the way yourself. So
I don't know, but at this point, I sure wish my parents were rich and famous.
I truly wish my grandmother, Dolly Parton, just come on in and swoop us up.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, because isn't there a big part of it? Like a label can like get you on these Spotify playlists, or like what is the thing that like makes an artist sort of break through? Is it social media? Is it like getting on one of these playlists or whatever? And is that, does that require having a label or a connection or knowing someone, or like, how does that work in music?
I think a big part, especially for country music, is radio play, because country music is still like, country radio is still very much a thing. And even here in our hometown, like everybody, you know, the younger people still have like Apple Music, Spotify streaming services, but the vast majority of people who still listen to country music are still listening to it in their cars on their actual radio.
Folks, that's all the time we have for now. But for my full conversation with Chapel Heart, find the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Travel Wisconsin's Logan Rogie, who joins the show to discuss fall hotspots in our beautiful state. And we'll go back to the future with a discussion about Back to the Future.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so glass. It's like...
It's only glass. Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.